Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I saw a nice photo on social media. A lot of you probably saw it as well. Jamie Newman, the photograph of his, is it called parchment? Is that what it's called? The diploma, the parchment paper, I guess, from Wake Forest University. Listen, that in and of itself is quite an accomplishment. Jamie Newman is a college graduate today at kind of a fancy pants private school. It's going to be a great feeling. And I'm sure that hard work to get it done, hard enough to graduate college at a place like Wake Forest anyway, to get it done in quicker time than most people would, I'm sure that took some real effort, some real sacrifice. And now Newman, as you all know, is ready for the next phase of his life, that next chapter, which involves him being at the University of Georgia. Now, I don't really know much about Jamie Newman as a person, really. I assume because he's a graduate, because he's a sharp guy, I assume that he knows what he's about to sign up for. Boy, I hope so, because his life, as we've said before on the show, is about to be just really, really different. It's one thing to be the quarterback at Wake Forest, where it's a small school. I think they only have, isn't it like fewer than 4,000 undergraduate students? There are high schools in Georgia that are that big. You know, you can be in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, on the campus of Wake Forest and not really get that much attention. If you're the quarterback of the University of Georgia, you can't be anywhere without getting a ton of attention. He is going to be a very famous person if he isn't already incredibly famous. That's just kind of on the horizon. It's just kind of on the scene here. Latest example of that, of the hype that grows around him, and it's not just, you know, Georgia fans who are doing this. It's national media, everybody else. Bill Bender from the Sporting News ranked his top 25 quarterbacks in college football. He had Newman at number 10, ahead of any other quarterback in the SEC, ahead of any other quarterback that was available on the transfer market for 2020. That's the kind of attention that Jamie Newman's getting. And even to some Georgia fans, sometimes it can feel like kind of a lot of, can we let this guy throw one pass, have one practice at Georgia before we start proclaiming him, as the betting markets have, one of the Heisman favorites, or as the draft community has, a very popular pick in the first round of the various mock drafts already available. And I totally understand where that's coming from, and I certainly appreciate why taking it a little slower is probably just a little bit better in terms of all that kind of stuff. However, when you're a program like Georgia that's on the doorstep of winning a national championship and has been there for a couple of years, and you bring in a guy like Newman that's so different from what Georgia's had in the past, it's just to be expected that that's going to get a lot of attention. There's not really a ton you can do about that one way or another. However, let me give you a different way of thinking about this for a moment when it comes to Newman. The job of going from a guy at Wake Forest that people don't know that much about to a guy at Georgia, which everybody, for good or for the bad, is going to know a ton about by the end of this year, that's not an easy transition to make, but that process of making that transition can be made better by the presence of George Pickens, the Georgia wide receiver. A lot of you probably also saw this on social media as well. On the video edition of our program this morning, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, I showed this. So Pro Football Focus put out this tweet that Pickens is like the only returning receiver in the country who didn't have a drop last year on 75 or more targets. Pickens had, as you understand, a truly sensational freshman season. I mean, I've said this before, in the midst of what was a down year for the Georgia wide receivers overall, a very disappointing season for that group, in the midst of that, Pickens performed about as well as any freshman receiver could for Georgia. And the fact that Pickens is here now as a proven commodity, a trusted resource at the receiver position, I think that ought to aid Newman's transition to the SEC. And what's kind of cool about this, in a roundabout way, is that it's almost Pickens paying forward what was kind of done for him as he also began his, in his case, it wasn't just a transition to the SEC, but it was an acclimation to college football coming in as a freshman a year ago when Pickens had the big breakout performance, now breakout nationally speaking, in the Sugar Bowl when he, you know, became most outstanding player in the game and got a chance to, you know, talk to reporters after the game. He talked about the process by which he grew up over the course of the year, and he gave a lot of credit to two guys, Kirby Smart, but also last year's quarterback, Jake Fromm. And the clip I'm about to play for you, when he says he or him, it's Fromm that he's speaking to. He was actually pointing to Jake when he said this during the press conference. Jake Fromm was in the room there. So listen to George Pickens give a little bit of credit to his quarterback a year ago for how it was that Pickens grew and developed over the course of his freshman season as a wide receiver, and think about how the opposite might be true for this upcoming season. Take a listen to this.
It's really just him. He pushed me every day. Coach Mark pushed me every day to be the player I am today. So just me connected with him at practice all the time is really just the best thing.
Now think about that for a moment. How cool would this be if when Jamie Newman is speaking at the end of this season, he says the exact opposite? There you hear wide receiver, all of this new to him at Georgia, saying, I got pushed every day by my quarterback. I got poked and prodded by my quarterback every day to get a little bit better. And I'm better for having been there and better for having been with Jake Fromm. Kind of a cool thing to hear George Pickens say. Now, what if it's Jamie Newman at the end of the 2020 season as he's getting ready to go on to what might be a NFL career or might be looking back on a very successful season at Georgia? What if it's Jamie Newman saying, hey, you know what? The bright lights of the SEC are a lot to deal with. The fame and the attention that comes from that can be a little uncomfortable at times. Boy, I sure am glad I had George Pickens to throw to. Boy, I sure am glad I had him and hit and the competitive fire that Pickens brings to the table. I'm glad I had a chance to be around that. Glad I had a chance to benefit from that, because that's really the next step for George Pickens, right? We know he can play the game. But at a place like Georgia, you're asked to do more than play. You're asked to lead as well. And in football, you have to be a good player, I think, to be a good leader. We know Pickens is a good player. And now he has a chance to grease the wheels for a quarterback's acclimation in life here. I think it's a really cool thing to think the way that Pickens once benefited from a quarterback, he can now turn around and be a receiver that benefits a quarterback much the way that Jake Fromm did for him as this transition is ongoing. I do have high expectations for Jamie Newman. I don't know that he's going to be as great as the most outlandish projections for him have been, but I expect him to be plenty good enough at Georgia, and I expect George Pickens to be a big reason why. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, as I said before, on video at 10 a.m., for now on Facebook and YouTube, of course, radio on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever you find them, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player. We're on Spotify, the world famous dognation.com. Many of you listen right there through SoundCloud. No matter how you get to us, we just really appreciate you being a part of our program throughout this time in which we've been locked down here at home. And as I look around in this makeshift studio that I've thrown together in my basement, I realize it's the last time I'm going to be doing this in the coronavirus lockdown. Tomorrow, we are making our triumphant return to the Dog Nation World Headquarters Studios. That should mean a lot of good things. Back on video on Twitter again. We haven't done a Twitter video since we've been on lockdown because of some of the tech issues associated with that. But we're back on Twitter tomorrow. Really excited about that. Excited about delivering the normal show to our video audience the way we've kind of come to expect. And for those of you that have had to tolerate the podcast being delivered to you a little late lately because of the timing and with recording it all, well, you know, tomorrow, hopefully we'll get back on a lot more earlier schedule for you on that front too. We're just really excited about all the ways we can deliver it. And, you know, genuine thanks. I want to express as much gratitude as I possibly can. And please know this is as genuine as I have the ability to do it. You guys have been so loyal during this time, and, you know, to see you tuning into the podcast every day, or, you know, hearing that you're listening to the radio show as we kind of go through all of this, man, I am just so grateful for that. I really am. It has provided me with a sense of normalcy. Heck, in these days, you can't take this for granted. It's provided me with a job, employment, to be able to continue to do this. So I don't say it enough, but let me make sure I say it loudly right now. Thank you so much for your support of Dog Nation Daily. Thank you for your support of Engineered Solutions of Georgia, who makes it possible for us here today. I'm really, really grateful for your partnership, and I do think of it as a partnership. Us enjoying a college football season together, you supporting what we're doing here, I just really appreciate that in every way that I possibly can. By the way, speaking of Engineered Solutions of Georgia, they make it all possible here today. Foundation waterproofing issues, they can solve both those problems for you. They're also proud partners of UGA, which makes them fun to do business with, and they're good friends of ours here on Dog Nation Daily, which is a great thing there as well. So if you notice that water creeping into your crawl space, your basement, your garage. You see those wet spots that didn't used to be there. I don't have to tell you that's not a great situation. You want to get that seen about. And some of you know deep down you've got a foundation issue. You see the evidence. You know it's there. You're worried what it might mean. Get the peace of mind you need about what's really going on and what it's going to take to get it fixed. Sometimes it's not as bad as it may seem. But if it's the kind of thing where the structural integrity of your home is in any way jeopardized, you want smart people doing that work for you. Don't, you know, go to some fly-by-night company that's, you know, trying to do this and 19 other things there as well. Trust my friends in Engineered Solutions of Georgia. As I said before, they got two full-time engineers on staff. They know how to get this done. They know how to give you a great solution to the problem that you're facing with a foundation or a waterproofing issue. They're also really easy to get in touch with. Engineered Solutions of Georgia can be found by simply dialing 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. ESOG is a proud partner of UGA. Good friends of Dog Nation Daily. They are good, good stuff all the way around. So one more thing on the subject of Jamie Newman before we move on. I saw I guess this was on Justin Fields' Instagram story where he and Newman are apparently working out together with, I think it's Quincy Avery, the quarterback's coach. You want to talk about a break the internet moment? Those two guys, a part of the same quarterback workout. I don't believe they were ever featured in the same photo together. They were just kind of tagged in each other's photos. But that's kind of a break the internet moment right there. Newman, the more talked about guy around Dog Nation right now. Fields, a very talked about figure in a previous iteration of Dog Nation, both together doing some workouts together. Kind of fun and interesting to see. I'm going to have Connor Riley in here in a moment. I'm going to do more of the Jamie Newman, George Pickens stuff with him. Before we get to that, I also noticed another recent graduate show up on social media. I saw a cap and gown for Trey McKitty, and that's the graduate transfer tight end from Florida State. Boy, I think that because we spend so much time talking about so many pivotal figures around the Georgia program, because McKitty has been out of sight, out of mind, because we had no spring practice and he's been working to graduate from Florida State, I think we forget what Trey McKitty, the tight end on his way to this program, might be able to provide. I went back in time, and from a previous show when we the subject of McKitty came up, I thought Dog Nation recruiting insider Jeff Sintel had something pretty interesting to say about McKitty at the time. This is an important reminder here. Take a listen to Jeff Sintel on what Trey McKitty potentially brings to the table.
I think the first thing you got to think of is not so much, you know, where these guys were rated in high school, because Doty and Fitzpatrick both were rated higher as tight ends, and McKitty was coming out of IMG Academy. I think more of it's kind of like grown man football. You've got a guy in McKitty that came out in 2017 class. He's at least a year and a half older than even Fitzpatrick, is the previous senior member of Georgia's tight end room. And I think the big number for here for me is 23. That's how many catches McKitty had last year, and that's how many catches the entire Georgia tight ends room had last year in 2019.
Yeah, so listen, I think that's a reason why McKitty ought to have a part of your mind share for what you expect Georgia to look like this upcoming season. Leave some room for a role for Trey McKitty. Now, I have said before, I'm really excited about the tight ends that Georgia has had on the roster. With all the attention that gets paid to five-star incoming freshman Darnell Washington, with good reason, Washington's a pretty spectacular athlete. I'm mentioning Trey McKitty right now, but I want to see John Fitzpatrick get a chance in an expanded role. I want to see Ryland Goede, now healthy, to get a chance in an expanded role. I'm looking forward to seeing both of what those guys bring to the table here this season. But it can't be discounted that McKitty was thrown to at Florida State. Florida State did not have a very potent offense. The fact that anyone's getting 23 catching that offense right now is at least worth noticing because of how anemic the Seminoles were. It reminds me so much of what we said about Lawrence Cager last season. You know, I don't know that anyone expected the season that Cager had when he was healthy for Georgia this year, but the one thing you'll remember me saying at the time is pay attention to the numbers. This was a guy that caught 6 touchdowns at Miami a year ago. He was a part of the Miami offense, which gives him a chance because of experience to be a part of what's going on here at Georgia. That's a prediction that turned out to be true from us last season. I'll say the same thing for Trey McKitty here as well. The fact that he was targeted and thrown to, came up with 23 catches, gives you a chance to see how he could be also used and a role here for Georgia as well. Will his impact be as impactful as what Lawrence Cager was when he was unhealthy last season? That may be asking for a lot. But could he have quite a role on this team for this upcoming season? That is certainly a possibility. So as I said before, when you're thinking about what Georgia may look like on the field this fall, don't forget about McKitty. He had cap and gown on Instagram. I'm assuming that means he's done with school there and the next phase to show up in Athens. Get ready for the start of the upcoming season, and I can't wait to see what he brings to the table. We really appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG here today with more on this topic, more on the Newman and picking stuff. Also, a little bit of a look at the upcoming announcement for Barrett Carter later on this evening, the four-star linebacker from Suwanee, Georgia. Let's do it all with Connor Riley right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And Connor, let me begin kind of with you where I was discussing a moment ago. When it comes to Jamie Newman, the growing hype that's around him and the things that people even outside the bubble of Dog Nation are saying, that's obviously a lot of pressure to put on a young man, the recently minted Wake Forest grad. But I do think the presence of George Pickens, what he did last year as a freshman, what he could do as a sophomore. If you're facing a lot of big expectations as a quarterback, if you're facing more attention and pressure than you're used to having, having a guy like Pickens lined out on the outside as a target to throw to, that's going to make that process at least a little bit easier, I would imagine.
Yeah, and if you actually go back and like I did, and look at Jamie Newman's time at Wake Forest, there's a wide receiver they have by the name of Sage Surratt. He's a very good wide receiver, you know, probably someone that should have a little bit more national recognition. And if you look at the on-off numbers from when he was on the field with Newman to when he was off the field with Newman, it is a Lawrence Cager-like with Jake Fromm sort of gap in between having a receiver of that caliber on the field versus not. And obviously that makes a lot of sense. You know, you want to have more talented players on the field around you to help you out. But on the field, you know, with Surratt, Newman, 29 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, completed 63% of his passes. With Surratt not on the field, 6 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 53% completion percentage. So I expect Pickens at the very least to have a sort of similar aspect on Newman's numbers. And I think obviously as good as Surratt is, I think Pickens might have the highest ceiling of any wide receiver currently in college football. So if Georgia is able, I think, to get and Newman specifically is able to get the most out of George Pickens, that's going to in turn make Newman look a whole lot better.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Sintel, our buddy, shared a photo with us. I guess it was on Newman's Instagram story at one point of the Jordan Pippen, the faces of Jordan Pippen were taken away. The face of Jamie Newman was there. The face of George Pickens was there. And typically you might expect the quarterback in the situation to be the Michael Jordan, especially if the quarterback's the one sharing it. But in this particular graphic, it was Pickens in the Jordan body. It was Newman in the Scottie Pippen body, obviously signifying that Newman would play second fiddle to George Pickens. And I think there's a really cool symbolism with all of that. You know, I don't know that you know, a wide receiver's impact is going to be greater than the impact of a quarterback, but the fact that Newman is willing to come in and at least to the extent you can read into a Instagram story pic, the fact that he's willing to come in and be sort of thought of as complementing what already exists with George Pickens as opposed to the opposite, I think that says something kind of cool about Jamie Newman's psyche, potentially. And I do think there is a symbolic explanation for kind of how the Georgia offense might work this season.
Yeah, as a big Scottie Pippen fan, I'd point out Jordan never won anything until Scottie Pippen became Scottie Pippen. So if you're maybe looking to rationalize why you'd have a wide receiver as your Michael Jordan, you know, I certainly think Newman as a Pippen type would be pretty interesting. Does that make Dominic Blaylock, Dennis Rodman, or Horace Grant? Does that make Zamir White, a Steve Kerr?
Yeah.
So we'll see from there.
No, it would be fun to kind of line all that up. I mean, I've said this a million times. In the college football playoff era, no team has won a national championship that didn't have at least one receiver exceed 900 receiving yards. So receiver play has been important for the champions in the college football playoff era. And if you want to have a more, I guess, practical conversation about how all this works between Newman and Pickens, I'm going to say something that not everyone's going to agree with. If you and I are aware of what Pickens did a season ago and aware of what the hype for him is going into year two. Opposing defensive coordinators are aware of this as well. And one of the problems of being a receiver, sometimes smart defensive coaches, it's easier to take away a receiver than it is to take away a quarterback or take away a running game. Sometimes the way you bracket coverage or whatever else, you can neutralize the play of a receiver, which leads me to say this. If Pickens is going to have as good a sophomore year as we think he can, and if he's going to help Jamie Newman's SEC transition as much as he probably needs to, here's the one thing I think you need to be comfortable with. Got to be comfortable with the occasional dangerous throw. I think one of the things that some people have said about Newman and his time in Wake Forest is that he was willing to throw the ball into a tight window. I think all good quarterbacks are. You know, I don't think every throw at the college level for the big-time players is going to be to a wide-open receiver. You've got to be comfortable throwing into a tight window. And frankly, Connor, I'll go so far as to say this. I'll tolerate the occasional interception from Newman if that interception is based on an attempt to get Pickens the ball. What I'm not going to tolerate is one of these games in which George Pickens is hardly targeted. At the end of the game, it's a shrug from the coaching staff that says, well, what do you want us to do? They're taking him away with the defensive coaching scheme. I think that you've got to, and I know not everyone's going to agree with this, but I'm going to stand behind it. If Newman's going to have the best year he possibly can, he's going to have to try to force the ball to Pickens a little bit, even when defenses are trying to take that away.
Yeah, I think you can point to some of the struggles Jake Fromm had specifically in those LSU games where if you're trying so hard to not make a mistake, and obviously all coaches, Kirby Smart in particular, preach not making mistakes, not turning the ball over on the offensive side of the ball. Sometimes trying so hard not to do that can really hurt you, I think, as a quarterback in a team. And I think you really only have to look at that 2016 Clemson team. Deshaun Watson was intercepted 17 times during that season. And I think most coaches would probably find that to be a little too high, perhaps unacceptable. Can imagine Kirby Smart, you know, probably tearing his hair out if you told him at the beginning of the year that his quarterback was going to throw 17 interceptions. But Deshaun Watson was also talented enough to know that, hey, over the course, for every interception I throw, I'm going to make four great throws to make up for it. Now, I'm not saying Newman is obviously going to be Deshaun Watson. I know a lot of people want to say, oh, he's going to be the next Joe Burrow. But if he's making three spectacular throws or three really good throws to every one interception that he throws, I think that's a ratio that you can live with. And yeah. To your larger point, you have to take – it's the old – To make money, you have to spend money. I think to succeed, you're going to especially on the offensive side of the ball with Georgia this year, you're going to have to take some more risks.
I think the phrase you're looking for is scared money doesn't make money.
Make money, yes. Yes.
to close out this conversation, I'll be a philosophical blowhard here for a moment. We're all working so hard to get football back on the field, and we're all I think, experiencing the pain of what life has been like without sports. With all that as the backdrop, this is no year to play it safe. You know what I'm saying? Like you get back on the field. This is no year to play it safe, calling running plays or safe throws. You got to swing for the fences. If we're lucky enough to be back in the stadium watching college football this fall, then by all means, just let it rip and go for it.
Yeah, I certainly think, you know, with Kirby Smart and sort of the concerns and criticisms about his offenses in recent years, yeah, why not just go all out this year and just say, hey, you know, any chance we're getting to play right now is a gifted chance, so let's just make the most of it and just let it rip.
And if it doesn't work, just blame on the coronavirus. And
yeah, yeah. They have a perfect built-in excuse for if the offense fails this year. So.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. By the way, with all the attention being paid to Newman's Wake Forest graduation, I saw on Trey McKitty's Instagram, he was also dressed in cap and gown there. I think that McKitty's one of those guys, because we spend so much time talking about other people, that McKitty gets lost in the discussion a little bit. You know, obviously, he probably wouldn't be available on the transfer market as a grad transfer if things had gone perfectly for him at Florida State. We've had Florida State experts on our show before explain why things were imperfect for McKitty in the Seminoles offense in the past. However, at the risk of hyping him too much, there's an element of McKitty's stat profile that reminds me a little bit of Lawrence Cager leaving Miami after last year. Someone that, you know, was just kind of in the mix, but there were certain numbers that suggested, hey, maybe he could be better at Georgia than people realize. For Cager, it was the touchdown number. For McKitty, it's probably the overall number of times that he was targeted by the Florida State offense. This was clearly a guy who was a part of their offensive plans. I'm not going to tell you that McKitty is as impactful as Cager was for Georgia last year when he was healthy, although it's fair to point out Cager was much more impactful than most people would have assumed he was. All I'm saying is let's not forget this young man's about to be on this roster. I guess that's the point that I'm getting to here. An experienced tight end who's played with a quarterback who's, you know, maybe looking for a reliable target. That could be a fun combination as well, Newman to McKinney.
Yeah, he took the words right out of my mouth with the Cager comparison there. I certainly think from a talent and production standpoint, what we've seen, Trey McKinney's a better tight end than Eli Wolf. And Eli Wolf, while at flashes, you know, I think he showed that he was a could have been a more productive tight end had the offense as a whole had a better year. I do think that McKinney is a guy who, you know, Georgia's not asking him to come in and be the guy. They're probably not even asking him to come in and do what Lawrence Cager did a season ago. But I think if he can fill that role of, hey, just be open, and if the ball is thrown to you, the ball is thrown to you, I do think that's going to make things easier for Blaylock, Pickens, and all the other outside wide receivers. And in turn, with all the attention that's going to be on Pickens and Blaylock, that's going to make things a lot easier for McKinney. And I think, you know, with all the struggles Florida State has had in the past couple of years, the fact that he's now really walking into a stable situation for probably the first time in his college career could help things open up for him quite a bit.
I'm making the assumption that a Todd Monken offense has fewer two tight end sets than Georgia has favored in the Jim Chaney, James Coley era. You think that's a safe assumption?
I don't know. I know with Tampa Bay, they used a lot of multiple tight end looks when they had O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. Now, obviously, those are two very good NFL caliber tight ends. But I think it'll be interesting this year, and that might be one of the areas you look to see if how much Kirby is sort of letting his hands go off the wheels, because it's pretty clear that he likes having multiple tight end sets, of having sort of bigger formations. And, you know, if we're still seeing a lot of Rylan Goede, Trey McKinney, Darnell Washington, Trey McKinney, John Fitzpatrick, Trey McKinney looks in formations this year, that might lead me to believe that Kirby Smart has not totally let go of the offensive control this season.
Yeah, you know, listen, I've said before, I want to see Goede and Fitzpatrick get their chance. I think they're both pretty interesting prospects. But you mentioned Howard with the Bucks in 2018. Memory serves, he got hurt that season. But prior to that, I think you saw Monken willing to get him the ball. And by the way, for O.J. Howard, a former five-star coming out of high school, you know, when he was at Alabama, he's a lot like the Georgia tight ends. A guy that didn't get used a ton unless they were playing Clemson in a national championship game. But Monken in that year play calling for the Bucks seemingly was willing to target Howard a lot. I think that Howard dealt with an injury that year. But other than that, you know, Monken kind of showed a willingness to kind of get O.J. Howard involved.
Right, and I think the thing you have to like with Monken is in the history of his offenses, he loves to feed guys who are the guy, and to sort of wrap it back around to George Pickens. You know, you look at the numbers Justin Blackmon had as a collegiate wide receiver. You look at how Mike Evans played under Monken in Tampa Bay. Even this past year, you look at the success that Odell, even though Monken obviously wasn't calling plays, you look at the success that Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry had. He has done a very good job of, and this is sort of like how Lane Kiffin calls his offenses, of identifying who his best players are and just feeding them the ball until they throw up. So I think if you're one of Georgia's top playmakers this year, if you're a George Pickens, you're Zamir White, expect perhaps a heavier workload than you would have if James Coley or Jim Chaney were your head offensive coordinator.
Today, one of the top prospects in the state of Georgia, Barrett Carter, is going to make his commitment. It's not going to be to Georgia. My assumption is it's going to be to Clemson. At least that's my best guess based on the online chatter that's out there. Connor, I've obviously liked Carter as a player. I'm just totally resigned on this fact now. It's one of the most amazing recruiting stories out there. The fact that Georgia has missed on some elite Atlanta area prospects over the last couple of years and frankly felt no ill effects from that whatsoever is really pretty fascinating. If we made a list of the guys from within the Atlanta area that Georgia's missed on, you would assume that would be devastating mm-hmm. for a program's recruiting profile. Georgia hasn't skipped a beat. And you can't say that they didn't want Carter. It seems obvious they did. It made one time it seemed like he might be going there, the same way you'd say about some other Metro Atlanta prospects. This is not a case of Georgia not prioritizing the player or whatever else. It's simply about the player choosing to go elsewhere. And Georgia goes nationally in almost every one of these instances, and I think in Carter's case it's going to work out much the same way, replaces him with a national player that's every bit as good, if not a higher rated player. It's really pretty fascinating. I'm stopped worrying about this. You know, obviously, it's just more fascinating to me than anything. Georgia is missing out on some Metro Atlanta kids, and yet, recruiting-wise, is seemingly not hurt by it at all. It's not nearly as easy as Georgia has made it look.
Yeah, I think Georgia's it's like they have an easy way of doing things, which is, you know, obviously no one's ever going to be able to lock down the state of Georgia or specifically the metro Atlanta area. But like there's certainly like an easier like we just focus on in-state kids. We do well there. And then for the occasional recruiting battle, they go out of state and they pull a guy in, sort of like what you saw they do in the 2017 class. But now it seems like they're just willing to fight all recruiting battles across the country, and they're actually able to win a lot of these. I'll have something later on today on Dog Nation after Carter makes his decision. You know, this is still clearly, I think, a loss for Georgia in the sense that you can't have Kirby Smart come out and say linebacker is our most important recruiting position in this cycle. You have one of the best linebacker prospects in the country in your own backyard at North Gwinnett High School. And to see him probably go to Clemson, that is still qualifies as a loss. Having said all that, Georgia is also very well positioned with, as you brought up, a number of other recruiting targets. Obviously, Shamil Munden is a name to know there, and him potentially teasing a June commitment is something to watch. Xavier Nsori, I think now becomes a really big name to watch at that linebacker position out of Florida, and he's something you actually saw last week with those Apex Predator posters that they were posting. I found it very interesting that Sori got one of those, mm-hmm. and Chaz Chambliss got one of those, but Carter did not. I think that's a reading of the tea leaves there. But to your larger point, it is sort of amazing that Georgia has had this lack of success sort of recruiting the prospects it's closest to. And if this were to happen at Tennessee, if this were to happen at Alabama, if this were to happen in Florida, you'd go on there and you'd kill Dan Mullen, Jeremy Pruitt, and Nick Saban. But sure. I think the fact that Kirby has shown that, hey, while sure we lose out on a few, you know, high-end Metro Atlanta stars, we can go out to Los Angeles and get a linebacker. We can go out to Scottsdale, Arizona and get a five-star cornerback. We can go, you know, all over the country and land some of the best prospects from there.
Well, you mentioned Tennessee. This is not hypothetical. This did happen in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Clemson came into the state of Tennessee and took all the best players. T. Higgins comes to mind as a for instance on this. And Tennessee did what most teams, programs would do in that scenario. They completely collapsed and had no one to replace them with, which is another example of what Georgia has done to counterbalance that of, right now, Clemson's got a big brand. Geographically, it's a lot closer to Swanee, Georgia than a lot of people realize. And so in losing this battle, you simply regroup. You go win nationally with somebody else the same way Darnell Washington, you know, as opposed to Rick Gilbert or, you know, George Pickens as opposed to Jaden Hazelwood. All of these examples that you want to cite, you know, Georgia has simply gone out and won a different battle when it lost the battle within its own borders. But Clemson, you know, very legitimately dealing with the same issue going into Tennessee, stealing its best players for a great number of years. Tennessee had no response whatsoever.
Exactly. You know, the metaphor. So, you know, we obviously just saw the Last Dance wrap up and Larry Bird had an iconic moment in there. But there's a story about Larry Bird, how sometimes during the regular season, especially after he'd ascended to MVP levels, that sometimes he'd just get bored in games and would try doing different things. So for one game, he just decided for the entire game he was going to shoot left-handed.
Yeah.
And I kind of think maybe that's where Georgia is at in a recruiting sense. Like, yeah, sure, it'd be easy to just rein in our local kids, you know, do as good a job as you can recruiting the Metro Atlanta area. And I actually think, you know, if Georgia was going to lose a Metro Atlanta area kid, I think going forward you're going to bet it's probably to Clemson because they've done as good a job as anyone recruiting that area. But to your point again, you know, yeah, Georgia didn't land Tank Bigsby in the last class. They landed Kendall Milton, who might be as good, if not a better, and I think a better prospect than Bigsby. You look at, you know, Darnell Washington or Reed Gilbert. So, yeah, Georgia has missed out on some of those local prospects, and I do think Carter counts as a, I don't know how significant, but it is a miss. But Georgia still probably in the long run going to be fine at that linebacker spot because of what they're able to do and who they're able to sell to across the country.
Let me finish with this. I more and more confident by the day that we're playing 12 regular season games, all of them in the fall, all of them when they originally scheduled. The one holdout on all of this has seemed to be the Pac-12 because of the shelter in place that's currently in place in the city of Los Angeles. But very quietly, you may have seen last week that the city of L.A. gave a go-ahead to the Lakers kind of get back working in their practice facility as kind of a, I guess, forgiveness of what would typically would be the shelter in place there. There have been a lot of talk recently about professional sports returning to both New York and California, some of the states that are most stringent with their lockdown stuff. Governor of Michigan's walked back some of her talk about not having, you know, fans in stands for the upcoming season. I really think all of this, not to bring politics into it, but I think all of this suggests that we're heading for a season that's a lot more normal than not, and maybe a lot more normal than some people have assumed it would have been as recently as a couple of weeks ago. Do you see it unfolding the same way?
Yeah, I've sort of long been in the camp of, I think we're going to have football. I think there's enough time from when this virus obviously started impacting things to when the season starts to where we should, in theory, be able to get our act together and have testing and treatment protocols in place to sort of mitigate some of the concerns with this. I do think California coming out yesterday and saying pro sports can return in the month of June, I think that was a significant step, you know, for a return to normalcy across the spectrum. I've always sort of held the belief that the South is going to push forward and have as normal a college football season as it can. But again, you know, this is, I think, all just a positive sign, and we have to continue to make these small progressive steps in the sense that, well, yes, you know, things are reopening. If we want to have, as you say, a totally normal season where, you know, the president is saying he wants to pack the stands, and I've said prediction wise, you know, I think that Georgia-Alabama game might have 110,000 people at it, including the president himself. You know, we still, while there is progress being made, we still have to continue to take the small steps, wear masks, be cautious. And I'll be very interested to see what the SEC presidents decide to do this Friday with their vote of when do they allow players back on campus. And I think that'll go maybe a long way in showing how quickly things potentially return to normal.
I'm going long, and I apologize, but with the vote coming up this Friday about returning back to campus for the programs themselves, it's been reported that Philip Fulmer is against a June 1st return, which means not all athletic directors are unanimous in their support of this, if that is indeed the case, with Fulmer, as has been reported by Matt Jones of Kentucky Sports Radio. You think the dissenting voice here matters in this vote for the chancellors and the presidents? Obviously, you know, they don't want anybody to be able to say, see, I told you so, if something goes wrong. If Fulmer is really against this, you think that matters? You think that could hold things up?
I don't think so. Because I actually think what you've seen with California and New York and their allowing or easing up of their restrictions on professional sports, I think when it comes down to it, people just aren't going to want to be left behind. And if a majority of the schools are okay with this and they're accepting the risks that come with this, if you say, no, we're going to hold out and sit back and see and wait and see for things to develop, I think, you know, you're going to say, fine, we'll just leave you behind because, you know, I'm not a disease expert, but if you're expecting a vaccine, a cure to come very quickly, I wouldn't hold your breath for that. So ultimately it all comes down to risk management and how much risk you're willing to associate and accept with this thing. And it's pretty clear that some schools are willing to accept more. And if you're not, you're going to get left behind. And while that's maybe not the best message in the world to have, if you want to continue to play with the big boys, that's just something you have to deal with at the table.
All right, very last thing, and I mean this seriously, although it's a totally ridiculous topic. You mentioned that your belief that there'll be 100,000 people in Tuscaloosa for Georgia, Alabama. Now, Connor, this is the intersection of two things that I really want. I really want a normal football season. I also really want Georgia to beat Alabama. It stands to reason that it's easier to beat Alabama in an empty stadium. So what do I want more here? Do I want the normalcy of, hey, you know, you got the crowds in there? Because if there's no fans for Georgia, Alabama, that means there's no fans for probably any game for the first 3 weeks. If that's true in SEC country, then, you know, heaven knows what some of the other places around the country are doing. So what do I want more here? Or what should I want more? Should I want the normalcy of the loud crowd, or should I want the easier win on the road and the Alabama fans having to complain about the fact they would have won, their team would have won the game had the stadium not been empty?
So I think the last point you made there is why you want the stadium full, because you're just going to be hearing bombardments from all sides. Oh, Georgia only won because there were no fans in the stand.
Yeah.
Last little tangent. I watched some of the Bundesliga this weekend, you know, for German professional soccer league, getting things up and running. It is a little bit of an adjustment from just a watching standpoint of seeing fans not in the stands. But, you know, I think there's certainly a lot of time between now and that September 19th game. And I think, you know, from your standpoint as someone who has to deal with, God, it's been so long since I looked at the comment section. Who's the one really good Bama commenter?
G Grace on YouTube.
Yeah. Look, as much as I like G Grace, like you don't want to give him any extra ammunition and saying, sure, oh, well, Georgia only won that game because there were no fans in the stand. So I think if you're wearing your Dog Nation shirt and your Georgia hat, you want fans in the stands that day.
I think you're probably right about that. Just give me the full stadium. Give me Alabama's best shot. That's more enjoyable. Plus, this may be one of those years we got to take one for the team and just root for America's return to normalcy more so than anything else. Good stuff, Connor. We appreciate you being here. I'll see you tomorrow in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios for a live return to the show presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Thanks so much for that. I really appreciate you, everything that you've done, and I'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Can't wait, BA. Looking forward to it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
All right, fun to have Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. Looking forward to seeing him as our on-site producer tomorrow as we return to our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios. I am really excited about that, and we'll be back to a normal version of our RS Andrews Cooldown. Huge thanks to them for being a part of the show there as well. You know, they can be trusted for air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric needs. There's obviously a lot of that right now when it involves the air conditioning. It's hot. It's been hot, and your air conditioning's probably been working. And anytime you sort of start the new spring, you know, the thing that you always kind of wonder is the air conditioning ready to go? Is it going to make its way through the summer to come? And that's just normal concern, normal thing to ask questions about. Well, if you want that peace of mind, RS Andrews can provide that, and it just costs $99 to get that smiley tune-up. Get your system tuned back up to factory fresh specs. Trust Dari and the whole team to get that done for you. You can find them online at rsandrews.com. I mentioned with Connor, and I mentioned earlier in the show, the fact that Jamie Newman was 10th on the Sporting News list of top quarterbacks in college football. This is probably something we should have our buddy Bill Bender, who wrote this from the Sporting News, on the show to talk about this week, especially now we're back in the studio. It's a little bit easier to have those outside guests. The whole list is actually pretty interesting. Lots of SEC names mentioned here. Bryce Young, the incoming freshman, shows up at number 25 on the list. Miles Brennan shows up at 24. Pretty interesting there. I've spoken before about how if you look at the last few teams that had to replace the number one overall pick in the NFL draft at quarterback, they've actually done a little bit better in doing so than you might think. But the fact that Brennan only shows up at number 24 on this list gives you an idea of how far that climb's going to be for LSU. And frankly, it's pretty speculative to put him on that spot there at that time, just given the fact we haven't seen a ton of him. Even more speculative, by the way, to have Young, who hasn't played at all, but you understand where that's coming from. He's a five-star. He's going to be at Alabama. Bo Nix is at just 22. This is an example of something I talked about yesterday. You know, is Gus Malzahn on a developer of quarterbacks? If he is, then we'll see good results from Bo Nix this year. Now, Georgia fans hope it's not true, at least when they play Georgia in the month of October. But, you know, we're going to see Jared Stidham in all likelihood as the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots. I made the case yesterday that if Stidham does well, that's not so much a feather in Malzahn's cap in Auburn as it is a question starter of how come he didn't do better when he was at Auburn? How come they didn't win more? Well, you know, Bo Nix, a guy that's a legacy, guy that got the experience starting his freshman season. If you're Auburn, you really need him to be better than the number 22 quarterback in the country by the time the season's done. KJ Costello comes in at number 20, transfer from Stanford. He's at Mississippi State. I believe that Costello will put up big numbers, and I don't think it's going to matter much to the tune of very many wins for the Starkville Bulldogs. Mac Jones from Alabama, 18th on this list. Interesting to see that Alabama's got two of the top 25 quarterbacks, according to Bill Bender, but you know, neither guy very proven at the moment. So a little bit more depth than the average team, but still a lot of unanswered questions all the way around. You finally get to Kyle Trask at 14. I know it must just absolutely drive Georgia fans, I should say Florida fans, crazy that they've got Newman rated ahead of Trask. Newman, as I said before, comes in at number 10. If Newman outplays Trask this season, if the Georgia offense is better than the Florida offense this season, I believe that's the beginning of the end for Dan Mullen. It's been said before, there's a Major League Baseball old cliche that towns fire managers. The general managers just let the managers know what has gone down. I think it's true in college football as well. What gets you fired in college football is when your own fan base grows tired of you. And I believe one of the things that'll make Florida fans tiresome is if the way in which they've touted Mullen as this tutor of quarterbacks, if Florida doesn't have the SEC's best this year when Kyle Trask comes back with a year of experience under his belt, it'll drive Florida fans crazy. By the way, Kellen Mond at number 12 on this list. Interesting that Newman rates ahead of Derek King, the transfer at Miami, who probably got more attention in the early stages of the transfer market than Newman has gotten. And then, this is not really an SEC thing, but kind of interesting nonetheless. On the number 3 spot on this list, Sam Howell at North Carolina. That's interesting for a couple of reasons. North Carolina plays Auburn out of conference. That's a pretty big game for Auburn after having some success beating Oregon, beating Washington, ACC opponent this year. UNC beat South Carolina last year. So that North Carolina-Auburn game is a fairly big game. And Sam Howell, which was a big recruiting win for North Carolina, gets a lot of attention from Bill Bender there. Pretty interesting stuff all the way around. And we will make that your SEC through. And as we get ready to wrap up things here on Dog Nation Daily here today, I will mention one more SEC story there. You may have seen that Ole Miss has announced a home-and-home with USC. And I guess, I think Mark Weiser had this. I guess Ole Miss and USC are going to play the same day that Georgia is also in California in 2025. To play UCLA. It'll be interesting to see if LA has removed its shelter in place by then, 5 years from now. But nonetheless, I guess as it's currently scheduled, Ole Miss will be at the Coliseum against USC. Georgia will be in Pasadena, the Rose Bowl against UCLA, on kind of a cool early start to the 2025 season. That's kind of fun to think about all the way around. I saw where USC also tweeted something at Lane Kiffin, you know, basically mocking him with like the sup Lane Kiffin type thing. You know, where does USC get off on that? You know, when they fired Lane Kiffin at an airport, they were, you know, a very relevant college football program. It hasn't necessarily been true since then, so maybe they should keep their tweets to themselves. But nonetheless, Gator Hater Updater, 1,298 days. We'll see you tomorrow in the studio for Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG. Talk to you then, everybody.